This podcast is part of the Podcavern Network. Check out other Podcavern shows at podcavern.com. Oneiric. Year 40. Intermezzo, as it were. First recording in 30 years. Without the annual beacon pulse, you wouldn't know if I'm alive or dead, I suppose. I'm sorry about that. I mean it, right now, as I say it. I buried my wife yesterday, Deirdre. That felt big enough to warrant switching on the old omnibook. The funeral was in the Dreaming, of course, in Buna. Danica was buried in a little private plot just inside the forested area at the back of St. Gemma's Academy for Gifted Children. This is the music we heard as the coffin was lowered into the ground for his requiem. I dimly remember mentioning it to you before. Bloody cat. I did just write a setting of the Lux Aeterna for soprano and string quartet. It took 2 weeks on a different level of the Dreaming not to explode after Danica's death. And I had a confused notion that this would be honoring her memory. But finally decided not to make the ceremony about me. I mean, it's a perfectly fine setting, don't get me wrong. I'll totally get it recorded at some point. The truth is, though, Danica never really enjoyed my music. To be perfectly frank, I'm not so sure she would have enjoyed Fauré's Requiem either. I remember asking her to listen to a movement of Monteverdi's Vespers for the Blessed Virgin. On the strength of her devotion to Mary, right? 2 minutes into it, she looked at me and asked, kind of lugubriously, you know, "Are they all like that?" Fatamti. In my heart of hearts, I knew the Dreaming is just another plane. But it's so easy to be, I don't know, non-committal about it. Pretend it's real when maybe it's not. But mostly, pretend it's not real. Like a film. Like a dream, really. I wanted to believe it makes people and things eternal. Danica's old, but not that old. Not really. She got sick. People do. Sometimes you just know it's nothing you can fix, and it's the last walk down the path to the clearing at the end. Lana's here. Val's here. Herr Gustavo, if you can believe it, is here. I mean, he's dead in the waking world, and to be brutally honest about it, he looks like he's probably on his own last walk in the Dreaming as well, but he made it. He very kindly brought an old photo of Danica and me, taken back when we were both in his class. I'm looking at it right now. She was about a head and a half taller than me in that picture. And I'm looking at me, looking at her with something akin to worship. She's looking at the camera. Funeral was Anglican. Had to be. At that little church a couple of miles out of St. Gemma's. Priest was a woman. Something I always like in an Anglican church. Changes the whole vibe. Reverend Josie. Good voice. Good singer. Not to be scoffed at when the liturgy gets a little traditional. The whole school was there. Half the population of Buna showed up as well. They had to install a ton of folding chairs out on the lawn and three big screens to stream the service to the crowd outside. Lana and Val were inside with me, of course. They buried the hatchet a bit, I gotta tell you. There's something of the yin and yang to those two. I couldn't tell you what each of them stands for, but I get this overwhelming sense that they are opposite forces in my life, pulling me in opposite directions. Which, in the case of Val, is a bit weird. I mean, Val's just this guy, you know? He's a friend, a lifelong walking companion on the big long road, and my hatch mentor, but, But nothing, I guess. That's a deep, tight link right there. I'm really close to building a working hatch, you know. I managed it a few times, put all of my soul into it, and it was working. I swear to my Lord and Redeemer, it was working. But never for long. Either it blew up or it just petered out. I don't know what this says about my soul. There was this acquaintance of mine ages ago. James, his name was, if I'm remembering right. His whole shtick was that I had no soul. Because I'm a pretty cold fish all told, see? Well, I don't dispute that. I am a cold fish. But I do have a soul, God be thanked, and fuck you sideways, James. I have a soul. It's just not quite ready to power a hatch. And Lana. I have a notion I'll think about her more now, even when she's away. This is not a noble thing to admit, Dee, but why would I lie to you? The truth is, I love all of my family and my friends, but I really have only enough space in my heart for one person who is not directly in front of my eyes. Out of all the people I love, you know this better than anyone. And I crave your pardon. I'm sorry. Anyway. Just one person. For the last 35 years, that's been Danica. She's taken all of the real estate I have inside of me. All of it. Every minute I've been conscious. It's a curse, really. I mean, it's not even like Danica appreciated it. I drove her insane. To the last, she was convinced that I didn't quite care about her daughter, about anyone but her, and in a sort of diseased way. She didn't want the constant attention, which she felt was often awkwardly expressed, you know. It was just too much for her. She thought I was needy. I suppose I am. Still, she got it wrong. It's not that I don't love the people that I'm not in the room with. It's that my brain betrays me. Outside of that one person, my brain just shoves anyone else not physically there with me at the back of my mind and shuts the door. It's like that for things, too. If I'm not looking at it, it ceases to exist. I know it sounds awful and self-serving, Dee. Kind of is. But I'm stuck with it. I've used hundreds of coping mechanisms to obviate this fault. Alerts, little messages in my shoes, lists. So many lists. So many. Anyway, with Danica gone, someone else will take up that space inside my soul, Dee. My daughter, I have no doubt. Maybe it'll make me a better dad. I wasn't that great of a husband, mine. It's not just a question of being faithful. I was the hungry one, no question. There's always one who loves the other more. It's like that for every couple. But we did stay together to the end. And she did tell me that she loved me many times before she went. As the die, I have no regrets. She only had a few. You know what's weird? I think I may have some time left with her. I can't be sure, but I remember scenes. A look she gives me, a meal where we share dusmakos for the first time together, a visit from Lana when we play with our grandson, and witness his first steps. I know these things haven't happened. I've never had dusmakos in my life. And Lana has no children, and she's going to have to hurry a bit at this point. But these moments are in my brain, Dee. Like burrs, sticking to the lining of my consciousness. They are in my thoughts, and they break me every time. They sear me every time. Am I remembering all these forward? Am I just making it all up because my wife is gone? Does Danica look younger in these memories than she did when she died? Pretty much in my arms. I don't know. Like my father. She was sick for a while before the end. And that changes a person's face. When she reached her last breath, the pain sloughed away and she suddenly looked 20 years younger. So I don't know. I spoke before the congregation. I'm quite good at public speaking, as you know, Dee. Being both a cold fish and a fairly good actor is the ideal combination, I'd say. I talked about food. Meals we'd shared. I talk about food a lot for some reason. I spoke of a role in the community as founder of the school, as a teacher, as a nurse, and a confidant to hundreds of children and a fair few colleagues. Herr Gustavo dabbed at his eyes. I spoke of her as a mother and saw Lana sob. I spoke of her as a friend, and even Val looked shaken. I spoke of her as a wife. As the one soul who took up all the space inside of me. I didn't cry then. Don't get me wrong. Even though I'm nearly entirely cyborged, I can cry. I just showed you that. After the burial, after I prayed over Danica's grave, there's space for me next to her in the ground and for my name next to hers on the headstone. Lana and I shared a meal, and my daughter and I cried together for what we'd lost and what we knew would remain lost until our own end. Then Val joined us, and eventually he cried as well. Got caught up in the spirit of things, I suppose. Later, he and Lana left together. I don't know what that means. I'm okay. I'm fine. I was in our room, sitting on our bed, when Herr Gustavo knocked at the door. I bade him come in. He looks very old, Dee.
You spoke well, Vance, he said.
Thank you, I said.
It's not easy, is it? He said.
He pondered for an awfully long time, then he gave me the following speech. I took it down as well as I remembered it after he left, Dee.
You live. Your grandparents, your parents, your siblings, your friends, your spouse, your children, and your grandchildren matter to you. A distance of 4 generations encompasses the world of your relationships. Most people have no real link to their great-grandparents. Most people could not even name them. You die. You are mourned. People say you won't be forgotten. And by the time your grandchildren die, you have passed out of all significant memory.
I stared at him. That's extremely cheery, I said. Thank you, mein Herr. He smiled sadly. Danica had not been a walker for decades, Vance, but she was on the big long road with you. So have I been. So too that silly hatch cheerleader and your daughter. All of us together on the pilgrimage, under the gaze of God. His smile broadened, but didn't exactly get any happier. Because it's not quite true what I said. You don't pass out of all memory. God remembers. I found that touching. I nodded like I understood all of it. Either it was very simple or it was a sort of riddle. You never know with Herr Gustavo. Where are you now? He asked. In the waking world. I shrugged. When I think I'm awake, I'm in Volke. First time in 15 years I'm somewhere I knew of before getting there. Ah. He looked at me more piercingly than he had in years. You are very close to an interesting pivot in your story. I asked what he meant, obviously, but I might as well not have bothered. He dithered and never really answered straight. I think he was just making shit up. We played chess. He won, of course. Then he hugged me. He said, I never thought you would see Danica's funeral before mine. I did see your funeral before hers, mein Herr, I said. He looked surprised. Then he laughed. That's true. That is true. What a strange knot consciousness can make of existence. You have all my sympathies for your loss, Vance. Danica was a good woman. Go with God. And may the big long road take you somewhere. And he took his leave. I'm exhausted, Dee. I need to plug in several of my components. My love to you and yours. You are the head of the household now. Family's in good hands. Oh, and thank you for the flowers. Danica would have loved them.
Notes to Oneiric, Year 40, by Tevor Troy, PhD, Alternative Narrative Traditions, Université de Montréal, February 21, 684. UDM ID TT 603782. Dear listeners, a personal announcement. I got my degree. I successfully defended last week and was received with a grade très honorable avec les félicitations du jury. Let's just say that wine was consumed afterwards. I want to thank the doctoral committee, as well as Danny, my dear partner, who held the fort more times than I could count during the last 4 years. Love ya. Back to Oneiric, Year 40. As I have noted before, the gaps in time between episodes eventually become quite extreme. Nevertheless, episode 8 does have the feeling of an interlude. For all that Danica is seldom seen in the story, and her actual voice is only heard once, back in season 1, episode 8, hers is a constant presence in Oneiric. And as we've mostly experienced Danica's presence through Vonderer's recollections and inner life, it is obvious that she will remain a presence in the story. The setting of the Lux Aeterna that Vons mentions, and which was, of course, actually composed by the author, will in fact be heard in the very last episode of Oneiric. Lux Aeterna is Latin for eternal light, and is part of the liturgy for the Requiem Mass, or Mass for the Dead. Dus Macos is a Haitian dessert, a sort of vanilla fudge that I'm gonna have to try now. God remembers is a phrase that the listener would do well to keep in mind. Many parallels can be found between this episode and Vincent Lauzon's earlier podcast, The Moth Collection. Indeed, one gets the distinct impression that both Vons and Moth, the protagonist of the Moth collection, are two characters cut from a similar cloth. They are repressed emotionally, they rarely cry, although Vons does break down in this episode. They are fascinated by language, and they are both described as the hungry one in their respective relationships. This is not exactly an attractive or complimentary phrase, and that feels very deliberate. Furthermore, in both podcasts, the main character is rather savagely self-deprecatory. What, if anything, that says about the author would, of course, be mere speculation.
Hi, everyone. I'm Tong.
I'm Sam.
And I'm Laura.
And we are
Disney Dummies!
Look, we know there are Disney superfans out there, but even the superest of fans could still be Disney dummies.
That's why the three of us are on a quest to watch every single animated theatrical release in chronological order, from Snow White all the way to whatever's out right now.
We dive into each movie in detail, talking about fun facts, talking about the animation, hit you with some hot takes, our favorite reviews on the internet.
We even talk about who fucks.
I still can't believe that's an actual segment.
So join us every second Wednesday for another episode of Disney Dummies.
And Pixar Pals when we finally catch up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brought to you by the fairy tale whimsical depths of the Pod Cavern.